Before we start, yeah, just ask the people to move on this side. Right? Those who are here, please move this side, because there are those people who will be coming on this side late, so they can join in, inshallah, without any problem. Surah Al-Fatiha. Another Surah Al-Fatiha is requested for a brother who died yesterday by the name of Ali Rida Qasimi. Please recite a Surah Fatiha, and may Allah, inshallah, salvage his soul and raise him amongst the Ahlul Bayt. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. The general point in following the seerat of the awliya, the anbiya and the a'imma in general, and in following the seerat of the Prophet in particular, is that the following of their seerat and the following of their practice comes with a price. It comes with its shares of problems and difficulties, of sufferings and tests. Whenever we want to, for example, follow the practice and the way of life of any great personality who is close to Allah, whether it be the Prophet, whether it be the Imam, it has difficulties in it. There are problems that come with it. But the fear of these problems and the fear of these dangers should not make us turn away from the great benefits and blessings that are in it, that are therefore following it. In other words, you have the dangers of following the practices and the seerat of the Prophet and the Imams, but at the same time, the rewards for following and the blessings for following are immense also. Those people who see that if I do practice this and if I do follow this, the problems will come and the dangers will come, should also realize that on the other hand, that if I take these risks, if I put myself in this danger, then there's that immense reward that's in place for me also. So when Allah said, لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنًا, that in the Messenger of Allah is an uswa-e hasana, is a role model, is an example for you. Then it is said, and this has been mentioned, with both the dangers and the rewards being kept in mind. Allah knew that it was not going to be easy to follow the seerat of the Prophet. When we are now looking back at it and we are thinking that, wait a minute, this is not easy. This is difficult. This is hard. How can I do this? In fact, we reach the result that we are unable to do this. So when we are unable to do this, how is Allah mentioning that this is a good example for you? When this example is difficult. When the example of the Prophet and Imam Ali is difficult. It is hard to follow. It is hard to practice. But we see that, on the other hand, the rewards are also great. Now let me just bring you down one step further so that you can have a little bit of hope. Right? And that is, my friends, you will be glad to know that it's very difficult to follow the seerat of those people who are closer to you than the Prophet also. Yes, it is difficult for you to follow even the example of ulama. Right? Let alone the masumeen. Let alone the Prophet and the imams. Right? That's far away, right? Let me just give you some examples of the ulama. And there are many examples of ulama we have throughout our history. Our history has been brightened by the stars of Ahlul Bayt, the ulama that Ahlul Bayt have produced through their knowledge, that have always brightened the path of Islam and have been the beacon of knowledge for all of humanity. And those examples are there. I'll just mention, you know, one or two examples so that we can see that, you know, how much are we careful of? How much can we make ourselves strict? You know, examples from our own lifetime that, you know, we have heard, we have seen, we have witnesses to say that, those people who have witnessed it themselves. A small example, something simple. You know, an example, you see that this example I read in a newspaper of in Iran. This was regarding Imam Khomeini. And it is said that Imam Khomeini, in the newspapers that were there, Farsi, you know, there were newspapers that were there. It has Arabic writing, right? Farsi is like Arabic writing. He would be very careful not to put his feet next to those newspapers. And because obviously usually the name of Ahlul Bayt is there, the name of Allah is there, sometimes this and that. So one time his friends said that, you know, we looked through it, there's no name of Ahlul Bayt or Allah, it's just wanted ads. It's, you know, like for help ads. So he said, maybe the names of those people who are seeking help are similar to that of Ahlul Bayt. I don't want to even go that close to disrespecting Ahlul Bayt. Now, I mean, when you look at this, you know, I mean, are you able to be that careful and that strict? Right? That strict as to see that, you know what, I don't want to disrespect Ahlul Bayt to that extent that even if someone's name is similar to that, I don't want to disrespect it. Knowing that it's like the name of Ahlul Bayt. See, this is, my friends, what I'm saying. And when we look at it, that, you know, are we able to practice such strictness? Sometimes we see we don't have the capacity to do so. Sometimes we see that if we start becoming so strict, it puts our life in disarray. Sometimes we say that if we start to become so strict, we cut off our relationship with those who are around us. And you will see that happen. If you become that strict, no one wants to be your friend. They'll run away from you. And they'll look at you and say, what's going on? What's wrong with you? Right? This will be the case if you are that strict. Are you that strict? And this is why we see that, for example, the advice we have been given by Imam Ali, by the awliya, by the ulama, is that do not see that we are so strict. Do not try to be like us. Imam Ali said, don't compare yourself to me. Don't try to be like me. You cannot be as strict as I am. Just be careful of your duty to the extent that you can. Be careful of your duty. To the extent that you can. So now, when they themselves are saying, listen, you can't do this. And on the other hand, we are being told that you need to follow the seerat of the Prophet and the Imams. How is this possible? You see, my friends, this is something, there's a reason, and I'm mentioning this again and again, there's a reason why Imam Hussein mentioned this in his constitution. Why he mentioned the seerat of the Prophet and Imam Ali in his constitution. There's a reason behind it. He didn't just mention it because he wanted to rhyme the other lines. You know, it looks good with the other lines. This is how, you know, for example, we write our poems, right? If it sounds good, let it be there, right? Just make it sound good. When the Imam speaks, he speaks with complete wisdom and complete foresight, complete knowledge and understanding, and knowing exactly what he's saying, and he wants to get through to us. And if he mentions the seerat of the Prophet and the Imams, then it means that there's a reason behind it. He wants us to learn this and to know that this is difficult and to know what are the secrets behind it. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Sometimes we see that, you know, practicing the seerat of the Prophet and Imams, right, is a lot of times not accurate or correct for us. You know, this is the seerat of the Prophet and the Imams, but sometimes it's not correct for us to do it. Right? There's reasons behind it. Why is it not correct for us? For example, I can give you, I'll give you examples of what I'm saying. So inshallah, today you'll get an array of examples from the seerat as to what happens. You know, for example, it is said that Imam Ali, alayhi salatu wasalam, lived in a certain way. He lived in a certain way. When we look at the example of the seerat, we see that from one imam to another, we cannot compare it. It's difficult to judge them. And then we see that Imam Sadiq lived in a certain way. And people came to Imam Sadiq and said, "Your grandfather used to live a simple life. Why are you living such a luxurious life? Compared to your grandfather, you're living it up. Really, you're living it. Look at your dress and look at what we heard from your grandfather Ali." They were trying to compare Imam Ali to Imam Sadiq. Now, which itself is incorrect and wrong to do so, but also Imam himself answered that. He said, It's not right for you to compare my grandfather to me. His position was different. My position is different. He was the ruler of the people of his time. I'm not the ruler of the people of my time. And when he was ruling, that was the level of the people who were in the society. That was their financial and economical level. Today's economical and financial level is much greater than that of what I am living right now. And hence the seerat of my grandfather cannot be understood through the cost of his clothes. It's understood in relationship to the financial situation of the Muslim Ummah. You see, again, not easy just to say that, oh, you know what, you know, you just look at his clothes, look at your clothes. It's not that simple. Following the seerat is not like that. We can't judge like that. We can't say like that. For example, Imam Ali was told that in the time of the Prophet, when he came to Medina, he used to encourage all the Muslims to dye their hair. To dye their hair. And so all the Muslims, they used to dye their hair in Medina. When Imam Ali became the ruler, there was no such encouragement from Imam Ali to do that. And they came to him and said, "Why aren't you doing this? This was the way of the Prophet. And you're not doing it. And you are saying that you uphold the seerat of the Prophet. Right? You claim that you follow the seerat of the Prophet. So this was his seerat. Why aren't you doing it?" So again, understand this. Imam Ali explained to them. But just this question, just this doubt that you had, just this complaint that you put forward, itself shows that you don't know what seerat is and you don't know how to read it. You don't know how to read it. Imam Ali said, He said, listen, when the Prophet moved to Medina, there were many Jews here. And there were Muslims who were few here. And the Muslims lived amongst the Jews. And hence, in order to create an identity for Muslims, Rasulullah said this, in order that we have a separate identity, that the Muslims don't get lost in the identity of kuffar, in how they look. That's why Rasulullah said that. Today, we are majority Muslims in Medina. Jews are the ones who are the minority. They need to find an identity, not us. They need to find their, not us. We don't need, we have an identity. Medina is our identity. Everyone who comes to Medina knows that this is a Muslim land, that the practices are Muslim. And hence, if a Jew or someone else wants to live here and maintain his identity, he needs to find a separate identity for himself. You see, this, my friends, is Seerat. Understanding Seerat is not just looking at how they did things and oh, this is how it happens. And many times we have the wrong example of that. Sometimes you see that people have the idea when they look at Seerat and when they want to practice Seerat, that they want to practice Seerat step by step, just like the Prophet did. Just like he did. And that's how they read history. They read history to see how did he do it. The Prophet used miswak. So miswak is what we'll do. We refuse to do toothbrush. You know? What are you talking about? You know, at that time miswak was a toothbrush. That's what he was using. No, you can't say that. Just do it just the way the Prophet did it. That's it. The way they read it, don't change it. You know? Sometimes when you look at it and see that, you can't just follow things precisely like it is. You know, a misconception that's there, for example, you know, and you see that many people say this, and it says that, you know, the seerat of the Prophet is that he used to have long hair, overflowing hair, long hair. And when I looked at the seerat and the books of seerat and history, I said, no, he did not have long hair. Where did he have long hair? There's only one time in his life that he let his hair grow. One time in his life that happened. And that's when he was going to make Umrah and he was stopped from making Umrah. The kuffar of Makkah refused to let him go and make Umrah. And Allah promised him that you will make Umrah. So now because Allah promised him, so Rasulullah did not cut his hair there. He let that hair grow so he can do the taksir in Umrah. And that's the only time he let his hair grow. It's the only time he let his hair grow. That's what you see. All it shows is that long hair is not bad, but it's not the seerat of the Prophet. You see, misunderstandings of how to look at the seerat. What is a seerat? There is seerat and there's a practice. Yes, you know how he did this once. Yes, he did this once, it happened. But this is not the seerat. This is not his practice. This is not his way of life. Right? His way of life is different and what he did sometime or the other is different. This is also what we need to look at when we do the seerat. So the question is, my friends, through this introduction I gave you, why is it hard to follow the seerat of the Prophet and the Imams? Why is it hard to follow? Let me give you two answers and I'll give you some explanations. How do you follow? Right? So send a loud salawat. Sometimes the first reason you see it's wrong, sometimes wrong to follow, and we cannot follow the seerat of the Prophet and the Imams, is because their condition and their situation and their circumstance is different than ours. We just can't take an action of theirs and apply to any situation, any circumstance that we are in. Right? For example, you know, they might be in a different circumstance that they are in, and we are in different circumstance. When we look at them, we see that they are doing something because of that condition they find themselves in. As an example, Rasulullah being the head of state of the Muslims, being the leader of the Muslims, he is the head of state. When he used to welcome and greet foreign dignitaries, leaders of different tribes and countries and nations who used to come and visit him, he used to afford them respect and honor. He used to stand up and he used to give them a place to sit and he used to respect them as a guest, as the head of a Muslim state. He gave them respect. Now we look at that example and say, the example, the seerah of the Prophet by looking at this, is that we need to give respect to all non-Muslim leaders. So now we start respecting Obama and affording him respect and say that, you know, we give you respect here, have our member sit on this. The Prophet did the same. Me being a nobody, me being nothing, when I do that, it means that I'm making Islam zaleel in front of a non-Muslim. When the Prophet is doing it as the head of state, he is representing the akhlaq of Islam to a non-Muslim. Representing, when do you represent the akhlaq of Islam? And when do you make yourself zaleel and incompetent and low in front of the non-Muslims? When you are nothing, now when you give that, afford that respect, for example, if the leader, if he, you know, if the, for example, these sort of president or even the local guy here, the congressman or the senator, if he comes to our masjid and says, oh, the congressman is here, give him the member to speak. Why would he do that for? Why would we do that for? That would be an insult to this member. It will be an insult to me and us, and as us as Muslims. That who are you to teach us? We are here to teach you. We are here to teach you. You can't teach us. We have the best teachers. We have the best book. We have the best knowledge, not you. So why should we give our position to you? We shouldn't do that. But if Rasulullah is doing it as the head of state, then there he's showing the akhlaq of Islam to them. He is there to defend as the head of state that I am here. So it's different. See, circumstances are different. You just can't take the seerah of the Rasulullah and try to practice it in this way. A lot of times we make these mistakes, my friends. Understand this, very important that we know this when we are trying to follow the seerah of the Prophet. I'll give an example so that we can lighten the mood. Salawat ala Muhammad wa alihi. Yes. You know, one time it happened. I was in Qom and I was invited to dinner to this, you know, alim's house. He is very well respected alim. No big ayatollah, anything like that, but, you know, speaker and very well known alim, this and that. So he knew me, I know him, and we are friends. And so he invited me over to his house. So I went there to his house and, you know, the food was there, you know, the dinner was there. It was me and him, you know. We were eating, and obviously it's the way in Qom that, for example, the men eat differently and the women eat separately. So my wife and his wife are in some other room, and, you know, me and him are there. So now, you know, there's food there. There's, you know, rice and, you know, chicken curry and everything. Now he had this bread. You know, now one bread is, you know, the normal Iranian bread, this and that. And on the other side, he had the, you know, this other type of bread. Right? And he was introducing this bread. He says, Maulana, you know what this is? Right? This is noon-e-jo. This is what Imam Ali used to eat. Right? And it was hard, you know. It was hard and dry. It was hard and dry. And you know what? You know, we need to keep up the sunnah of our imams. I was like, happy. I said, very good, you know, really good for you that you're doing it. He said, what can we do nowadays? This is too expensive. You know, there's only one person who makes it, and he charges you an arm and a leg to sell this. I think you missed the point. You know, you completely missed the point in why Imam Ali used to eat that. Right? I mean, do you think he was to like it or this and that? I mean, that was the bread of the poor people. That's why he ate it. That was a staple food of the poor people. That's why he ate it. So you miss the point of what the seerat is. This is what happens when we are unaware, when we don't know how to practice the seerat. We make a mockery out of the seerat. We make a mockery out of the lifestyle of the Prophet. This is usually how it ends up happening. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The second reason that we cannot follow the seerat of the Prophet is the fact that his capacity is greater than us, his energy is greater than us, his faith is greater than us. I mean, really, I mean, you can't do things that the Prophet did. Rasulullah used to pray so much that his feet would bleed, standing up in prayers. His feet would bleed, there would be blood coming out of his nails. To the amount he used to stand up in prayers. How long can we do that for? Even if we try to do something like that, eventually we will break and we will quit. And this is more dangerous than even starting it. This is more dangerous than even starting to do that practice. Sometimes when we follow the seerat, we see that we are broken. And when we become, you know, when we break ourselves, we become hopeless of ourselves. Oh, we can never do this. This is all useless. It's too much to do. And you see, many people are like that. In their young age, you know, they get introduced to these things. And right away, you see, they have a big, long beard. And they are trying to do all the nawafil. They're trying to do all these things. And at the end, what happens is because they're not able to do it all the way, they eventually break. And when they break, they quit. They don't do this. And they go further away from where they started. They end up having an attitude of hopelessness. Just hopeless. I can't do this. It's all of these things too hard to do. You know, it's impossible to do these things. Who asked you to do it in the first place? You never understood. Some things are not meant to be practiced like that for us. This is where you see the true understanding of seerat comes. And when the wrong concepts of practice are there, then you see it's difficult. My friends, let alone the Prophet and the Imams. Just let me tell you, we ourselves have differences amongst us. We are equal to each other. We are just normal people. We are equal to each other. We go about in our lives doing this and that. I'm telling you, no one from amongst you can follow the others exactly step by step. You can't. And when equals cannot follow each other exactly and precisely step by step, how is it that those who are on the lower level can follow those who are on the higher level? You equals cannot follow yourself. If I tell you, one of you, that try to do exactly what the other brother does, you see, you will not be able to do it. It's not that it's hard in this, it's difficult, my friends, to do that. And this is why you see that we need to be careful. Don't have the wrong concept. Don't have the wrong concept. These things need to be kept in mind when we want to follow the seerat of the Prophet. Do not be blind followers of the Prophet, you know, of his seerat or Imam Ali's seerat. Just blind followers, whatever happens. Right? You know, like you see nowadays, the Wahhabis, Taliban. Right? Who are these people? Blind followers who just take the apparent side of something without having any information of what's inside it, what its meaning is, what its content is, and they just apply it into their life. Just completely, stupidly, and when they do that, they not only make a mockery of themselves, they make a mockery of Islam, and they harm Islam in the process. And they make life hell for everyone after that. Because of their misinformation, because of their unawareness. This is very important. So now, with all of these things that I told you, all of these things that I just told you, and all these hardships and difficulties that are there in practicing the seerat of the Prophet and the Imams, with all these difficulties we have, what is the conclusion? My friends, the conclusion is that the seerat of the Prophet and the Imams is not simple. It is not simple. It cannot be done without contemplation and study. It cannot be done without explanation from people who know, from ulama who have a more comprehensive understanding of Islam. So, Two things I will say, my friends. Two solutions we have. How do you follow the seerat of the Prophet? Two things that you need to do in order to understand the seerat correctly. Two things you need to have. Let me mention, if you send a loud salawats. The first thing that you must have in order that you follow the seerat of the Prophet in the Imams correctly is thinking, reason. First thing, my friends. Allah has made this deen, Allah has made this religion in such a way that there are two places where you are required to think. He has made this religion in such a way that there are two levels, two places where you have to think. Where you are forced to think. If you don't think, you will make a mistake. What are those two places? The first place where you have to think is in the lesson and the seerat itself. What is the meaning of this thing that the Prophet is doing? What is this that the Imam is doing? Understanding that, studying that, contemplating that which is there. When I read a book of hadith, I read a hadith. What does this hadith mean? Where did it happen? How did the Imam do it? Understanding the seerat itself. This is the first place you have to use your mind and you have to think. And the second place you have to use your mind and think is that after you understand that, now you have to think, how does that seerat apply to my situation? Now I have to think about my situation now. Where? How does this belong to me? What do I have to do with this? What is in it for me? How can I practice it? Let me give you an example. Prayer. My friends, you know this? Prayer. It's very simple, right? It's wajib. It's wajib. Everyone knows namaz, salat is wajib. Right? One of the furu'ad-deen, the first furu'ad-deen. Namaz, salat, prayer. Now tell me, there are two things in prayer that you must do before it becomes useful for you. Otherwise, you haven't understood prayer yet. Two things you must do. First of all, you need to know what prayer is. What is prayer? You need to think about it. You need to reflect about it. You need to contemplate. What is prayer? What is it itself? Define it. Know it very well. And then the second thing after that you need to know and think about is, how can I make it useful for me? What is prayer in relationship to me? How do I get close to prayers? What do I have to leave in order to get close to prayers? What do I have to do in order to get close to prayers? Not everyone can do the same thing. And everyone has to do a different thing. Some people have to leave wealth in order to get to prayers. Some people have to leave poverty in order to get to prayers. Some people have to leave anger in order to get to prayers. Some people have to leave their love in order to get to prayers. Some people need to forget their misery in order to get to prayers. Some people need to forget their happiness in order to get to prayer. You see, for everyone, prayer is different. It's a personal thing. It's an individual thing. And that's why everyone has to think, how do I come close to prayer now? What does it take me to get closer to prayer? What do I have to sacrifice? What do I have to practice? This, my friends, is how we understand the seerah. This is how prayer becomes useful for us. One thing I just mentioned. And everything like that, take it in your life and practice it like that, my friends. So thinking is the first element. Thinking, reflecting. This is what we are doing here. I'm not here to lecture you. I'm here to think with you. Right? To ponder and reflect so that we can reach a good conclusion together. This is what we are doing here. This is what we are trying to do here. We are trying to reach a result for ourselves. I'm not the know-it-all that I come over here and say, okay, this is what you all need to do, this and that. No, we are trying to reach somewhere, ponder and reflect and make ourselves get somewhere. This is how we get to that place, my friends. Let me give you an example from the life of the Prophet if you send a loud salawat. The Prophet was sitting in the masjid with his companions. And someone came to the Prophet in the midst of everyone and said, Ya Rasulallah, someone is committing a sin and he needs to be punished right around the block. Go there right now and we need to punish them while they're in the act. Catch them. Obviously, everyone heard it. Understand this example. You all heard this before. Understand the example. Now, someone from the companions got him and said, Ya Rasulullah, let me get him. This person who was always in charge of beating up women only, women prisoners. Right? The men prisoners used to be taken care of by others. The woman prisoners were sent to him. Right? He's known for abusing women. Right? He said, let me go. Let me go at them. I'll do it. How dare they do this? Let me take care of them. Rasulullah said, no, no, no. Have a seat. Have a seat. You know, Ali, go. You go. Right. So, Imam Ali went there. My friends, understand, you know this example, you've heard this before. I just want to get something out of this for you. You see, why did he stop this guy and why did he send Imam Ali? It wasn't because, you know, Imam Ali is Imam. There are many things he asked other people to do also. And this was something really important also. Right? It wasn't like, for example, he's sending someone for Khaybar or something. Right? It was a very simple issue. He didn't need to send Imam Ali. But the example that Rasulullah is giving is important. He said, the reason I'm sending Ali is because he can think. The other person can't. He doesn't use his reasoning. In every situation, what's important, my friends, someone who thinks will first think whether this is a situation of strictness or compassion. The first thing he would think is to see whether I should be compassionate here or should I be strict here. Someone who doesn't think, they don't think that. They'll say, whatever the case, I'm just going to make myself known, be known. That's why he said, Imam Ali, you are a mufak. You would know what the right thing to do is. That's why I want you to go there. You see how important it is for a person to think about situations, to analyze situations, to make sure that they're making the right decisions before they practice it, before they do it. Imam Ali did go there. And he went there with so much noise that even if there was someone there, they would run away. They ran away, whatever the case was, you know, Imam Ali didn't find them. So he came back and said, Ya Rasulullah, I didn't find anyone there. I didn't find anyone there. And when Rasulullah heard this, he says, you know, Subhanallah, he started praising Imam Ali. Why? Because this is the way of practicing Islam. Analyzing situations in your life. Looking at the seerah of the Prophet and the Imam. Seeing how it could be applied. This is the first step of understanding seerah. If we don't think, then, you know, if I come on the minbar and say, this is the seerah of the Prophet, it will never help you. No matter how many books you read of seerah, will never help you if you don't think for yourself how to apply it in your own life. That's why, my friends, tafakkur, ta'ammul, tadabbur, reflecting and thinking is so important in Islam. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. If someone tries to practice Islam without reasoning, really, he will make life hell for everyone. This is what happens. Why? Because you have no reasoning behind it. That's why you end up, you know, making mistakes and hurting other people. And right away, Rasulullah used to do this. Here, I'll beat you up with that. Mama, what are you sowing? What are you doing? What are you acting like this? You know, there has to be a thought process on what way. That's why it's very important, my friends, thinking and reasoning. Second thing, right, that we need to understand the seerat, right? First thing is what? Thinking. Second thing is what you need to understand the seerat correctly is qalb salim. Qalb salim is a healthy heart. A heart that is healthy. A heart that is sound. Salim or salim, this means that it is wholesome. It's not filthied by sins. It's not dirtied by ma'siyat and guna. This is what you need in order to understand the seerat good and correctly. Someone who has a clean heart would be able to sense the seerat and know how it's applied in his life. It helps you right away when your heart is good. When you don't sin, when you don't do wrong, you see, it helps you to understand things correctly. Right? وَمَنْ يُؤَذَّمْ شَعَائِرَ اللَّهِ Right? Whoever respects the signs of Allah is from what? مِنْ تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ Is from the purity of the heart. You see, the purity of the heart is what makes you understand seerat. This is what makes you understand seerat. If someone's heart is dirty, then no matter how much they know about knowledge of Islam, it will not help them. For example, this is the reason why we are told many times that when you read a majlis, you know, when you read a speech or a majlis, this and that, do not say many ayat in your majlis. Just say one ayat and explain that. Don't say many ayat because this is incorrect. This is wrong for doing that. Someone who does it is wrong. He's doing it out of riya and ujub. He's doing it out of riya and ujub. Just read one ayat and explain that. Contemplate on that. Think about it. Read the speeches of Rasulullah and the Imams. And the ulama, you will see that. Just one ayat they'll take and they'll explain that to the people. Reflect on it. This is what a speech is. This is what education is. This is what this majlis is. Take that and that's it. Why? Because we are not here to just increase our information. We are here to enlighten ourselves. We are not here to increase our information. Oh, I got to know something new today. What benefit is it for you? How is it helpful for you? Has it changed your life? Has it made you a better person? Has it made you go closer to Imam Hussein? Has it made you love Hussein more? Or is it a new talking point you have? A new talking point that next time we have chai, I know what to raise. Right? Next time I meet my Sunni friends, wait till I use this on them. What kind of knowledge is that. That's not knowledge, that's just information. We don't want information, we want knowledge. We want something that will enlighten our hearts. Make us go closer to Allah. This is the right way of doing things, my friend. Now, in short, because it's already late and I'm going to now end this. In very short, inshallah. Rest of the things I will mention later. What is the shortest way of making your heart healthy? Very simple. What is the shortest way of understanding the seerat of Rasulullah? What is the shortest way of getting to Rasulullah? Rasulullah himself said it. Rasulullah himself said it. He made it clear. He opened the door and he said that, listen, this is the way that you come to me. This is the way you understand my seerat. This is the way you find my friendship. This is the way you fall in love with me and I will fall in love with you. What is that way, Rasulullah? He says, Ana madinatul ilm wa aliyun babuha. And this is not a Shia slogan. It's not a Shia slogan. Rasulullah is not saying, here, I'm giving you a slogan so every time you go, you can say this. It's not a Shia slogan. This is, with all his wisdom, he is saying it, that if you want to come to me, then the door is Ali. You reach me through him. You understand my seerah through him. You go to Ali. Now, obviously we take it one step further. You go to Ali through Fatima, through Hassan, through Hussein. In other words, you reach Rasulullah through Ahlul Bayt. Right? You reach Rasulullah through Ahlul Bayt. You reach his seerat through Ahlul Bayt. You reach his love through Ahlul Bayt. And I'm not just making this analogy out of nothing. I'm going to read the proof for you. I'll read the proof for you so that you know it also. How is it? Oh, you know, this is all, you know, like Maulana, he's just, you know, making analogies from one hadith to another. No, I'm saying it's a reality, my friends. You come close to Rasulullah through Ahlul Bayt. You come close to his seerat and his understanding of his seerat through loving Ahlul Bayt. In other words, my friends, you will know the seerat of Rasulullah more if your relationship with Ali is good. If your relationship with Fatima is good. If your relationship with Hassan is good. If your relationship with Hussein is good. Let me make it even easier for you to understand. You will understand the seerat of Rasulullah more and get closer to the seerat if you give importance to the majlis and azah of Imam Hussein. This is it. How important is Azza to you? How much are you crying for Hussein? How much do you feel sad for Hussein? How much are you beating your chest for Hussein? This is how we know that you have a heart that is healthy. Crying for Hussein and doing matam for Hussein is a sign of a healthy heart. Of qalb salim. Right, again, I said, I didn't give you the proof yet. I'm just giving you the words right now. And then, inshallah, you understand what I'm saying. I'm not just saying this because it's, you know, because it makes sounds good. I'm saying this because these are the words of Ahlul Bayt. I'm just giving it to you right now so you understand it better. I'll give example before I say, you know, where this is written. I'll give you an example first, my friends. One of the maraji that we have, who was very well respected, and he was an amazing personality in our contemporary history, is Ayatollah, marhum Ayatollah Marashi Najafi. He is one of the great ulama of our times, right? Marhum passed away. And this is his words. I read it in a book that was published where all the Ayatollahs, you know, all these great personalities of the year were, you know, speaking in regards to Imam Khomeini in his younger days. And in that place, Ayatollah Marashi said that, you know, we began to love Khomeini. You know when? That when we were young, you know, we were all young. They knew each other when they were students. That we all knew each other as students, we began to love him, and our love for him increased at a young age because he would be the one who would cry for Imam Hussein the most, and he would be the one who will beat himself on the chest for Imam Hussein the most. More than anyone, he would be the one doing the matam. More than anyone, he would be the one who will be crying. And we always knew that he had this love for Ahlul Bayt so hard, so much. Friends, this is where you get the healthy heart from. When someone has that much, I mean, when you cry the most for Imam Hussein, when you hit yourself the hardest for Imam Hussein, this is where you get it from. This love, this expression of love. This is where it comes from. That's how we know that I have a healthy heart. Because, you know, whenever I mention Imam Hussein's name, I cry. My friends, You know, I'm reading Ziyarat-e-Ashura. In Ziyarat-e-Ashura, this line is there. And this is taught to us by Imam Sadiq al-Islam. And he taught us Ziyarat-e-Ashura. And in that Ziyarat, we see that this line we find in that. He says, Ya Aba Abdullah, O Hussein, Inni ataqarrabu ila Allah. I seek nearness to Allah. Wa ila rasulihi. And I seek nearness to His Messenger. Meaning, I want to get closer to Allah. I want to get closer to His Messenger. Wa ila amir al-mu'mineen. And I want to get closer to Ali. Wa ila Fatima. And I want to get closer to Fatima. Wa ila al-Hasan. And I want to get closer to Hassan. Wa ila al-Husayn. And I want to get closer to Hussein. And I will achieve all of this with what? Bimawalatikum. By loving you. By crying for you. By coming to your majlis. Understand that? Your closeness to Allah grows when you cry for Imam Hussein. Your closeness to Ali grows when you cry for Imam Hussein. Your closeness to Fatima grows when you cry for Imam Hussein. In other words, it's Hussein's love that is taking you there. It's Hussein's mourning that is taking you there. It's Hussein's azah that is taking you there. In other words, when you come here to the majlis of Hussein, then Hussein is taking you to Allah. Hussein is taking you to Rasulullah. Hussein is taking you to Ali, Fatima and Hassan. Can you imagine that? Hussein, you're doing all of this for me. Just by coming here. Yes, by coming here. My friends, it is unfortunate for anyone. They can go anywhere they want. You can go to Arafat. They can go to Hajj. They can go anywhere. Probably there's a chance that they might not change. That they might not become different. That they might not improve. That they might not become great. But how is it possible that you come to Imam Hussein and you don't change? How can you not come here and not change? Really, if someone goes back from the majlis of Imam Hussein and says he did not change, it means that Hussein could not change you, then who could change you? If Hussein couldn't change you, then who can change you? My friend, it's Hussein who's taking you and taking your hand and taking you towards Ahlul Bayt and making you love them more. Hussein, make me love Rasulullah more by taking me by your hand and taking me to him. Hussein, make me love Ali more by taking me by your hand. Hussein, by this we know that you are closer to us than they are. Take us to them and make us go closer to them. By Ziyarat-e-Ashura, what it says is that the closest imam to the Shias is Imam Hussein. The closest imam to the Shias is Imam Hussein. That's what Ziyarat-e-Ashura is saying. Ziyarat-e-Ashura is saying this, and Imam Hussein is showing this. You know why he is the closest to you? Because he was injured the most for you. He has taken the most arrows for you. He has taken the most spears for you. He has been hit by the most swords for you. That's why Imam Hussein is closer. And in other Ziyarat-e-Ashura, they're saying, we are asking Hussein that through Hussein, through your love and through your majlis, we want to get closer to the Prophet. We want to get closer to Ali. We want to get closer to Fatima. You know, you want to get so close. How can you not be that close? You who are here to cry for Imam Hussein, how can you not be that close? You know, do I have to say any masaib and suffering of Fatima to make you cry? Do I have to say that Fatima's ribs were broken? Do I have to say that Fatima's hair turned white in 6 months? Do I have to say that Fatima cried so much that she said that the days have turned into nights? No, Hussein, I don't need to say this to these people because they are in your hands, Hussein. Don't you see, Hussein, they're in your hands. I see them in your hands. I don't need to recite any Masaib of Fatima to make them cry. All I have to say is Zahra. Zahra. And I can hear them cry. Because they have ma'rifat, because you have them in your hands. You have taken control of them. You have given the ma'rifat to them. Wa ila al-Hasan, Imam Hussain, that through your love I want to get closer to Hassan. I want to get closer to your brother. So close to him that I would give my life. I would die for his musibat. I would die for his suffering, Hussein. You know how Hussein cried for Imam Hassan? You know how Imam Hussein cried for Imam Hassan, his brother? That one time Imam Hassan saw him in the corner. Imam Hussein turned around in the corner. Imam Hassan asked him, "What are you doing, Hussein?" Hussein, his eyes were filled with tears. His face was drenched with his tears and he was crying. He said, "Hussein, why are you crying?" He says, "Because I see you being poisoned and the poison being coughed out of your lungs." Imam Hussein cried so much for Imam Hassan. He cried so much for Imam Hassan. My friends, Imam Hussein is love. That's why we see bimawalatikum, with your love we will reach there. And his love is because he loves you so much. He has so much love to give. He wants so much love to give that no matter how much you love him, Imam Hussein will always love you more. Imam Hussein will always love you more, my friends. Understand this much. No, there's no one who can beat Imam Hussein in love. You know, how much he loves you, how much he loves the grandfather, how much he loves Imam Ali, how much he loves the ummah of his grandfather. You know, I mentioned to you about Ubaidullah ibn Hur al-Juhfi, who rejected Imam Hussein. Unfortunate, he was very unfortunate. Because he rejected a person like Imam Hussein. Really, how can you reject that? But you know what? After he rejected to be with Imam Hussein, the rest of his life he cried. And when I read that, I wondered, you rejected Imam Hussein, why did you cry for the rest of your life? Why did you cry for the rest of your life? And you know what? I saw this in history, in our books of history, that Ibn Hur said, when he was asked, why are you crying so much? You know, you rejected him, it's over now, this has been gone, so many years have passed, and you still cry for him so long ago. Why are you crying for him? He says, because you know why? When Hussein came to me the last time to meet me and offered me to join him, Imam Hussein was sitting in my tent and I saw kids playing around him. There were kids who were playing around him. His own children who came there, uncle, his nephews, this and that, were playing around him. Imam Hussein showed so much affection. Hussein showed so much affection for these children. He looked at them with such loving eyes. He touched them with such loving care that I wondered what would happen if Hussein was killed and if these children became orphans. How would they live by losing such a father like this? And every time that picture comes back to me, I cry because Hussein had so much love for them. He had so much love for them. That these orphans that are there for him, he would give their life for them. If there's an orphan in front of Hussein, I cannot imagine how Hussein would go to protect him and to love him. Hussein, I hope you did not bring any orphan to Karbala. Hussein, I don't know. Hussein, I hope you did not bring any orphan to Karbala, because I can only imagine how much your heart will be in pain if you saw him being killed. These people do not have mercy on orphans. These people don't have mercy on orphans. Oh, but what can I say for the orphan of Imam Hassan? Oh, the yatim of Imam Hassan, who's in front of Imam Hussein. Imagine when Qasim came in front of Hussein and looked at Hussein. And Hussein knew what he was going to ask him. And he still said, what can I do, Qasim? I can't let you go. I can't let you go. Qasim, I can't let you go. He went back again. Two times he was refused. He was upset. Qasim was crying. And you know, his mothers, he saw him. There is no hope now for Qasim. Qasim, you have to go in the battlefield, Qasim. You have to go in the battlefield, Qasim. Because you see, all of the ladies here are the wives of Hussein. I am the wife of Hassan. And I want you to go on behalf of Hassan. Qasim could not go until she remembered a letter that Imam Hassan had given for Qasim. She took the letter, gave it to Qasim. Qasim read the letter from Imam Hassan, which allowed him to go to the battlefield. He came to Imam Hussein and said, my uncle, see this letter. See this letter. I have this letter. Read this. Read this. This is my father's letter. Imam Hussein took the letter, recognized the writing of his brother. Tears started flowing from his eyes. You know, it might sound easy for you, but for me it's hard to understand. You see, Hussein is more thirstier than anyone else. Where are these tears coming from? Where are these tears coming from Hussein? May we be sacrificed for you, Hussein. Hussein called Qasim. He hugged him and said, Qasim, you are the memory of my brother, but the command of my brother is greater than mine. He let Qasim go. He put the imama of Imam Hassan on Qasim. He let him go forward. I will end soon now. And this is it. Give your last condolences to Rasulullah. Give your condolences to Fatima. Qasim ibn Hassan is going to the battlefield. As he goes to the battlefield, just like all the Bani Hashim and the youth of Bani Hashim, there is no fear in his eyes. Nowhere can it be seen that this was anything that happened. But for Imam Hussein, this was a delicate situation. Imam Hussein, he was there. He knew that Qasim is yet. He knows the importance of orphans. He knows what orphans are about. He knows what Islam has written, how you should behave with orphans. When you see that Imam Hussein, he saw Qasim there. His eyes were stealthily looking at Qasim to make sure nothing happens to him. If anything would happen, he would jump to save him. He would go forward to make sure that he can protect him. But when Qasim went to the battlefield and cried out to Imam Hussein as he fell down, he cried out to his uncle, uncle, come to me. I am in need of your help. Come to me. Imam Hussein, they said that like an eagle he went to the battlefield. Unlike for anyone else, he like an eagle, he went to the battlefield. Abbas from the other side, both of them gunned in order to save Qasim. When the enemy saw them coming in such fierceness, they began to run back. They were afraid of them. In fear, they began to run back. And when they began to run back, then you see that they ran over Qasim. The horses ran over Qasim. When Hussein arrived on the body of Qasim, only Hussein could withstand that. Only Hussein could withstand that sight. When he saw the body of Qasim stitched to the ground of Karbala, plastered to the ground of Karbala, he said, "Qasim, it's hard for your uncle that you called him for help, and I cannot help you." Bhat me Hussein.
Yeah, I was saying.